You are listening to InSearch Radio, dedicated to providing inspirational and important content for you and your family. You can listen to our broadcast through our website at InSearch.com or pick up our podcast through iTunes. We encourage you to post your own stories and to share our content with others.
Genesis chapter 7. Then the Lord said to Noah, "Come into the ark, and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. You shall take with you seven each of every clean animal, a male and his female, two each of animals that are unclean, a male and his female, also seven each of birds of the air, male and female, to keep the species alive on the face of all the earth. For after seven more days I will cause it to rain on the earth 40 days and 40 nights, and I will destroy from the face of the earth all living things that I have made." And Noah did according to all that the Lord had commanded him. Noah was 600 years old when the floodwaters were on the earth. So Noah and his sons, his wife and his sons' wives, went into the ark because of the waters of the flood. Of clean animals, of animals that are unclean, of birds, and of everything that creeps on the earth. Two by two they went into the ark to Noah, male and female, as God had commanded Noah. And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were on the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day all the fountains of great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. On the very same day, Noah and Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wife, and three wives of his sons with him, entered the ark. They and every beast after its kind, all cattle after their kind, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth after its kind, and every bird after its kind, every bird of every sort. And they went into the ark to Noah, two by two, of all flesh in which is the breath of life. So those that entered, male and female, of all flesh, went in as God had commanded him, and the Lord shut him in. Now the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth, and the ark moved about on the surface of the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed 15 cubits upward, and the mountains were covered. The waters prevailed 15 cubits upward, and the mountains were covered. And all flesh died that moved on the earth, birds and cattle and beasts, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and every man, all in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life. All that was on the dry land died. So he destroyed all living things which were on the face of the ground, both man and cattle, creeping thing and bird of the air. They were destroyed from the earth. Only Noah and those who were with him in the ark remained alive, and the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. Genesis chapter 8. Then God remembered Noah and every living thing, and all the animals that were with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subsided. The fountains of the deep and the windows of heaven were also stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained, and the waters receded continually from the earth. At the end of the 150 days, the waters decreased. Then the ark rested. In the 7th month, the 17th day of the month, on the mountains of Ararat. And the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the 1st day of the month, the tops of the mountains were seen. So it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made. Then he sent out a raven, which kept going to and fro until the waters had dried up from the earth. He also sent out from himself a dove to see if the waters had receded from the face of the ground. But the dove found no resting place for the sole of her foot, and she returned into the ark to him, for the waters were on the face of the whole earth. So he put out his hand and took her and drew her into the ark to himself. And he waited yet another 7 days, and again he sent the dove out from the ark. Then the dove came to him in the evening, and behold, a freshly plucked olive leaf was in her mouth. And Noah knew that the waters had receded from the earth. So he waited yet another 7 days, and sent out the dove, which did not return again to him any more. And it came to pass in the 601st year, in the 1st month, the 1st day of the month, that the waters were dried up from the earth. And Noah removed the covering of the ark, and looked, and indeed the surface of the ground was dry. And in the 2nd month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dried. Then God spoke to Noah, saying, Go out of the ark, you and your wife, and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing of all flesh that is with you, birds and cattle and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, so that they may abound on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth. So Noah went out, and his sons and his wife, and his sons' wives with him. Every animal, every creeping thing, every bird, and whatever creeps on the earth, according to their families, went out of the ark. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a soothing aroma. Then the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake, although the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth, nor will I again destroy every living thing as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease. Genesis chapter 9. So God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every beast of the earth, on every bird of the air, on all that move on the earth, and on all the fish of the sea. They are given into your hand. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. I have given you all things, even as the green herbs. But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. Surely for your life blood, I will demand a reckoning from the hand of every beast. I will require it, and from the hand of man. From the hand of every man's brother I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God he made man. And as for you, be fruitful and multiply. Bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply in it. Then God spoke to Noah and to his sons with him, saying, And as for me, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every living beast on the earth with you, and all that go out of the ark, every beast of the earth. Thus I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, This is the sign of the covenant which I make between me and you, and every living creature that is with you, for perpetual generations. I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. It shall be when I bring a cloud over the earth that the rainbow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. The water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. The rainbow shall be in the cloud, and I will look on it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And God said to Noah, This is the sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. Now the sons of Noah who went out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Ham was the father of Canaan. These three were the sons of Noah, and from these the whole earth was populated. And Noah began to be a farmer, and he planted a vineyard. Then he drank of the wine and was drunk and became uncovered in his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment, laid it on both their shoulders, and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father. Their faces were turned away, and they did not see their father's nakedness. So Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done to him. Then he said, Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants, he shall be to his brethren. And he said, Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth, and may he dwell in the tents of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. And Noah lived after the flood 350 years. So all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. Genesis chapter 10. Now this is the genealogy of the sons of Noah: Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And sons were born to them after the flood. The sons of Japheth were Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tiras. The sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah. The sons of Javan were Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim. From these, the coastland peoples of the Gentiles were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, into their nations. The sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. The sons of Cush were Saba, Havilah, Sapta, Rama, and Sabatka. And the sons of Rama, Sheba, and Dedan. Cush begot Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calna, in the land of Shinar. From the land he went to Assyria and built Nineveh, Rehoboth, Ir, Calah, and Rezin between Nineveh and Calah. That is the principal city. Mizraim begot Ludim, Adamin, Lahabin, Naphtuhim, Pathruzim, and Caslahim, from who came the Philistines and Kaphtorim. Canaan begot Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, the Jebusite, the Amorite, and the Girgashite, the Hivite, the Arkite, and the Sinite, the Arvadite, the Semerite, and the Hamathite. Afterward, the families of the Canaanites were dispersed, and the border of the Canaanites were from Sidon, and as you go toward Gerar, as far as Gaza, then as you go toward Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, Zeboiim, as far as Lasha. These were the sons of Ham, according to their families, according to their languages, in their lands, and in their nations. And children were born also to Shem, the father of all the children of Eber, the brother of Japheth the elder. The sons of Shem were Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. The sons of Aram were Uz, Hul, Gather, and Mesh. Arphaxad begot Selah, and Selah begot Eber. To Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. Joktan begot Almadad, Sheleph, Hazemerveth, Jera, Hadoram, Uzal, Dikla, Obal, Abimanel, Sheba, Ophir, Havilah, and Jobab. All these were the sons of Joktan, and their dwelling place was from Mesha, as you go toward Sephar, the mountain of the east. These were the sons of Shem, according to their families, according to their languages, in their lands, according to their nations. These were the families of the sons of Noah, according to their generations, in their nations, and from these the nations were divided on the earth after the flood. Genesis chapter 11. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They had bricks for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, "Indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they purpose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore, its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. This is the genealogy of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begot Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. After he begot Arphaxad, Shem lived 500 years and begot sons and daughters. Arphaxad lived 35 years and begot Selah. After he begot Selah, Arphaxad lived 403 years and begot sons and daughters. Selah lived 30 years and begot Eber. After he begot Eber, Selah lived 403 years and begot sons and daughters. Eber lived 34 years and begot Peleg. After he begot Peleg, Eber lived 430 years and begot sons and daughters. Peleg lived 30 years and begot Reu. After he begot Reu, Peleg lived 209 years and begot sons and daughters. Reu lived 32 years and begot Serug. After he begot Serug, Reu lived 207 years and begot sons and daughters. Serug lived 30 years and begot Nahor. After he begot Nahor, Serug lived 200 years and begot sons and daughters. Nahor lived 29 years and begot Terah. After he begot Terah, Nahor lived 119 years and begot sons and daughters. Now Terah lived 70 years and begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. This is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begot Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in his native land, in Ur of the Chaldeans. Then Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no child. And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan. And they came to Haran and dwelt there. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Genesis chapter 12. Now the Lord had said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Then Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran. And they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Moreh. And the Canaanites were then in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, To your descendants I will give this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord, who had appeared to him. And he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. So Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there. For the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass, when he was close to entering Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife, Indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore, it will happen, when the Egyptians see you, that they will say, This is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say, You are my sister, that it may be well with me for your sake, and that I may live because of you. So it was when Abram came into Egypt that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. The princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commanded her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. He treated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys, and camels. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say, She's my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go your way. So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. Genesis chapter 13. Then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, to the south. Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, in gold. And he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So Abram said to Lot, Please let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right, or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. And the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, Lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see I give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I give it to you. Then Abram moved his tent and went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and built an altar there to the Lord.
You are listening to InSearch Radio, dedicated to providing inspirational and important content for you and your family. You can listen to our broadcast through our website at InSearch.com or pick up our podcast through iTunes. We encourage you to post your own story and to share our content with others.
Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be continuing with the encouragement to trust in God as we pick up in the 73rd Psalm, beginning with verse 6. And now with today's message. Here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
Therefore, he said, pride compasses them about as a chain. They're wrapped up. Like a person wrapped up with a chain, so they're wrapped up in pride. Violence just covers them like a garment. Their eyes stand out with fatness. That is, they have so much, they eat so much, their eyes just sort of bulge out on their face. They have more than their heart could wish. I mean, the wicked have it made, man. They don't have any problems. They just, you know, they have more than their heart could wish. You know, they eat just the finest of the gourmet foods and, you know, they just fat and... Yet they are corrupt. They speak wickedly. They speak proudly. They set their mouth against the heavens, and their tongue walks through the earth. They speak out against God. They speak out against the people of God. They are blasphemous. They reproach God, and they reproach the children of God. But yet the people return, and waters of a full cup are wrung out to them. They, again, this full cup, they have more than their heart could desire. Their life is full. And yet they say, how doth God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? They speak contemptuously of God. Oh, how does God know? How does God know that, you know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? And the psalmist said, behold, these are the ungodly who prosper in the world. They increase in riches. This trip that Satan is taking him on in the mind leads him to some very wrong conclusions. The kind of conclusions that Satan is trying to bring you to. And the conclusion is this: I have cleansed my heart in vain. I've washed my hands in innocency. It doesn't really pay to try to live a good life. It doesn't really pay to try to serve God. That's the conclusion that Satan is bringing him to. And Satan's almost got him. I mean, his foot has almost slipped. He's just about to go down. My feet were almost gone. My steps almost slipped. For all day long, I've been plagued. And I'm chastened every morning. I mean, my life is filled with suffering. My life is filled with pain. It seems like I have no relief. And so here I am trying to live a good life, trying to live a righteous life, trying to serve God, and I've got all of these problems and all of this pain. It really doesn't pay to try to live the good life or to serve the Lord. Now he said, if I will speak thus, behold, I would offend against the generation of thy children. If I would just leave it here, if I would just draw these conclusions and leave it there, then I would be an offense to the children, the generations to come. But he said, when I thought to know this, it was too painful for me. I just couldn't think about it. Every time I'd think about it, it was just too painful for me. I just couldn't handle it. Until, he said, I went into the sanctuary of God. And then I understood their end. The sanctuary of God gave him a whole new perspective to life, because it brought him into the consciousness of the eternal. Now, that is something that the sanctuary of God should always do for us. It should always bring us into the consciousness of the eternal. The problem with our analysis and the conclusions that we draw from them is that we are usually only analyzing that which we can see of the temporal, material world around us, and we draw our conclusions from that, and we don't take eternity into view. For what should it profit a man if he would gain the whole world and lose his own soul? So here's the wealthy wicked. And it seems he's increasing in riches. Man, he controls the whole world. And he dies and goes to hell. You know, so what profit is there? When you take the eternal, rather than being envious, the guy's been dead now for 50 years. You know, shall I envy him still? His whole estate was blown by the kids. He made alcoholics and wrecks out of all of them. Now the whole family's a mess. Shall I envy him? God forbid. Coming into the sanctuary of God, there is a new perspective, because you broaden the perspective unto the eternal. You look down at the end of the path. You see what is at the end of the road. What is at the end of the path for you, the child of God? Maybe you are going through suffering. Maybe you are going through hardships. Maybe you are struggling and just barely making it. As Satan is pointing out the guy down the street who's dealing drugs and driving that new sports car and seems to have everything, you know, and he has that fancy boat and the whole, you know, 10 yards, and man, you know, I can't even pay rent this month. And look at that guy who doesn't pay to try and live a good life, you know, try to serve the Lord, because man, here I am suffering and hurting, and that guy's got everything. And he's so blasphemous. The guy just, you know, talks against God, and yet look at all he's got. Yeah, but look where he's going. Look what's at the end of his path. And look at what is at the end of your path as you follow Jesus Christ. So I went into the sanctuary of God, and then I understood their end. What a difference it makes in my evaluation of life. For the psalmist now says, surely you have set them in slippery places. He talked about his own foot almost slipping. But hey, I'm not the guy in a slippery place. They are the ones who are in slippery places, for you are going to cast them down to destruction. The end of the path that they are on is a path of destruction, and God will cast them down. They will slip right into eternity. How they are brought into desolation as in a moment. Death, any moment, lurking, waiting. And they will be utterly consumed with terrors. As a dream, when one wakes up, so Lord, when you wake up, you will despise their image. It seems that God is just sleeping as far as allowing them this period of going on in prosperity and in blasphemy, as though God is just sleeping. He's not obvious of it, but Lord, when you wake up, when you begin to move, when you begin to act, you will despise their image. And thus he said, there in the sanctuary of God, my heart was grieved because I was convicted over my thoughts. How foolish was I, and ignorant. I was thinking of man in terms of an animal with no future, no eternity. And so I felt this foolishness. Oh, God, you know, I was thinking so wrong about the situation. I was looking at it from the wrong perspective. This is the consciousness that he had in the sanctuary of God. 4, I am continually with you. God, you're with me all the time. I have the joy of the knowledge of your presence with me. You don't leave me. You don't forsake me. Lord, you're with me all the time. And you hold me by the right hand. You are taking me by the hand to lead me through the path of life. And you will guide me with your counsel. And at the end of the path, you will lead me into glory. You see, the end of their path is utter terror. It's destruction. It's desolation. But the end of my path is glory. God holds me by the hand. He's leading me down the path to my Father's house. And as David said, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Talks about the shadow of death that crosses the path, but I'm on my way to my Father's house. He's holding me by the right hand. He's leading me. Oh God, I am so privileged. I am so blessed. Who have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon earth that I desire beside thee. Lord, you are my life. My life is encompassed by you. Their life is encompassed by pride. It surrounds them like a chain. But my life, Lord, is encompassed by you. My flesh and my heart may fail. The old body, it can wear out. And it will wear out. But God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For lo, the end result, they that are far from you will perish. You have despised all of those that have gone whoring from thee. But it's good for me to draw near to God, for I put my trust in the Lord God, that I may declare all thy works. The contrast to the end of the road. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. And at the end of the path of the wicked is perishing, destruction, desolation. The path of the righteous is everlasting life. I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And so the psalmist, coming into the house of God, saw life with a totally new perspective. And that should always be, and I pray that it always shall be, that this place will be a place where when people come in, they get the right perspective of life itself, for they are brought into the consciousness of the eternal. Living out in the world, rubbing shoulders with the world, seeing the dishonesty, the cheating, and the whole scam that is out there, and trying to live a righteous life many times, brings just a lot of problems in our minds as Satan begins to hassle us. But coming into the sanctuary of God, we get the right perspective and we realize how blessed we are to have that hope of eternal life in Christ. They have no hope. Psalm 74 is thought to have been written at the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonian army under Nebuchadnezzar. There are others who believe that it was written at the time of the desecration of the temple by Antiochus Epiphanes at the time of the Maccabees. However, the psalm itself would lend more towards the destruction of the temple under the Babylonians, because he speaks of the utter destruction. Antiochus Epiphanes did not destroy the temple. He did profane it, but he did not break it down and burn it as was done by the Babylonians. So the picture is this. The city of Jerusalem is a waste. The temple has been destroyed right down to the foundation. Because when Zerubbabel began to rebuild the temple, he had to lay again the foundations of the temple. So the city has been razed. The walls are destroyed. The Babylonians have carried the people away captive, and there's just a few people left amidst the rubble of the once glorious city of Jerusalem and the temple of God. And the psalmist cries out, O God, why have you cast us off forever? Lord, is this desolation going to go on forever? Will we ever rebuild? Will we ever come back? Will it ever be as it was? Have you cast us off, O Lord, forever? Why does your anger smoke against the sheep of your pasture? Lord, why are you so angry with your own people? I can understand you're being angry with the enemies, with the wicked, but Lord, your own people. Remember your congregation, which you redeemed of old. Now he's going back to the fact that God had redeemed them out of the bondage of Egypt. They are the rod of your inheritance, which you have redeemed. And this Mount Zion is where you dwelled among your people. This is where God, your people, came to worship you. And he looked at it and he saw just the rubble and the ruin. Lift up thy feet unto the perpetual desolations, even all that the enemy hath done so wickedly in the sanctuary. For your enemies roar in the midst of your congregations, and they set up their banners or their flags for signs. To see the enemy's flag flying over the city of Jerusalem was a hard thing for the man of God to take. It seems like the enemies have triumphed over us. The enemies were roaring. They were their shouts of victory, their shouts of glee as they were destroying the temple and destroying the houses. He said it used to be that a man was famous according as he had lifted up axes upon the thick trees, and how quickly he could bring down a tree with an axe. And they were the guys, that's the kind of contest they had. And the man was famous according to his ability to lift up an axe against thick trees. But now they break down the carved work with the axes and with the hammers. The Temple of Solomon was filled with beautiful carved work, ornamentation. And now they were taking these axes that should be used in the forest in felling the trees, and they are using them to destroy this beautiful carved work in the temple of God. How it must have hurt the heart of God's people to see the temple so desecrated and destroyed. That beautiful, beautiful building with all of the glorious carved works just to be hacked up and broken in pieces with their axes and hammers. And then they set fire to the sanctuary, and they have defiled by casting down the dwelling place of thy name to the ground. It was taken right down to the foundation. As they said, Zerubbabel had to rebuild the foundation. They said in their hearts, let's destroy them together. And they have burned up all of the synagogues of God in the land. Now, the reference to the synagogues is what causes other theologians to say it happened at the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, because they did not really build synagogues throughout the land until a later date during the time of Zerubbabel is when they started building the synagogues. But they did have worship places. And it is thought that this reference is to the worship places. We see not our signs. We see not our own flags flying, but the enemy's flags. And there are no more prophets, no one here to let us know how long this is going to go on. Jeremiah was in Egypt. Daniel was in, and Ezekiel were in Babylon. No prophet was left there, and so they were just sort of in a quandary of you know, how long this desolation is going to be. Of course, Jeremiah told them that it was to be 70 years, but the writings were probably not yet widespread at that time. So no prophet to let us know.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse venture through the Bible in our next lesson, as Pastor Chuck Smith continues with A Plea for Relief. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD. And phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse venture through the Psalms. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Pastor Chuck Smith with today's closing comments.
God bless you. Keep your eyes on the Lord. Love the Lord, ye His saints. Give glory unto God. Worship Him in the beauty of holiness. Commit your ways and your life unto Him. Let God rule and let God reign. May you feel and know His presence, His love and power working in your life as He molds and transforms you into the image of His Son for His glory.
As we look around at an impatient, instant, get-it-now society, we may have those same expectations of faith. Just as Abraham's faith developed as he got to know God better, so your faith will expand and develop as you walk with God. In his new book, Faith, Pastor Chuck teaches the scriptures that will help you learn how to increase your faith.
Faith believes when you cannot see.
To order a copy of Pastor Chuck's new book, Faith, and to preview a chapter for free online, visit thewordfortoday.org or call 800-272-WORD. Again, that's thewordfortoday.org.
Faith believes when you cannot see. Yes, I know.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.
You are listening to InSearch Radio, dedicated to providing inspirational and important content for you and your family. You can listen to our broadcast through our website at InSearch.com or pick up our podcast through iTunes. We encourage you to post your own story and to share our content with others.
This is John DeSalvo. I want to tell you about an incredible product for your car called 5-Star Shine. Once you use this, you'll never have to wax your car again and it will always look bright and clean. 5-Star Shine is the only paint protection system ever granted a U.S. patent and used by the U.S. Navy in the world's harshest marine environments. 5-Star Shine protects cars, trucks, SUVs, boats, and aircraft for years and keeps them much cleaner between washes with a super slick coating. It also keeps your vehicles always looking their best. In addition to the world famous 5-Star Shine paint protection system, 5-Star Shine also offers car dent removers, car scratch removers, products for removing ugly oil stains from driveways,